Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com.
Everybody stop what you're doing, please!
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G.
Where's the hammer?
From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it, and Eric is here to guide the way.
Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio.
These are the wrong plans. These are the old plans.
Oh. Welcome to...
Stop it! Stop
Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single weekend and also during the week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
Yeah, this is where we are here to help you with each home improvement project you're working on. We're not going to be your normal call-in DIY show here where we might have 32 people call in with the same plumbing question. We try to do a little bit more of a deep dive, but we do help you if you've got a question.
Absolutely. We want to be here. We want to be a resource for you any time of the day, to be completely honest. We have our in-studio phone number, which is on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're going to give us a call, 971-233-8992. The way this works is because sometimes our show airs in the middle of the night. And, you know, Eric's got to sleep sometime.
Absolutely.
So you leave a message with your name and where you're calling from and what your question is and what you're dealing with. Let us know a good time to call you back. Eric will call you back at that time. As long as it works for both of you, and if not, we can correspond.
Yep.
But we'll record it, put you into the show, and even if we're talking about something this week that triggers a question, we will still come back and revisit your question next week. We have no issue with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're here to help you with that. And if there's a subject that you think we should tackle.
Oh, yeah.
We love suggestions. Yeah, so you can do that. You can message us or call us. Or if you just want to send us a quick note, go to the Contact Us page, which is over at aroundthehouseonline.com. And you can send us an email right there, and we'll go right back to you. Make sure that we've got that taken care of for
you. Yeah, and we do a lot of interaction with our fans on Facebook, but we really want to let people know that AroundTheHouseOnline.com is really the hub for everything Around the House with Eric G. That is where the podcast goes up immediately. The store's there. About Us is there. Even more home improvement content that we don't even get to on the podcast.
Yeah.
You've got your More Good Day Oregon videos.
I just loaded up a bunch of new videos on there this last week, so right now, I just added up how to install a bidet toilet seat, scrubbing air and removing a virus in your home. I even have my wine display up there. So.
I love it. You've done so much video over the past month that you're just like, I don't remember which ones I put up.
I don't know what I got up there.
But there's so much good stuff. Go check it out, aroundthehouseonline.com.
You got it. All right. Well, I wanted to talk about in this segment of the show here, converting an attic space into usable storage. This is one of those things that when you really start to take a peek at it, it seems like an easy task.
Yeah.
You know, all right, I got a stair. Maybe it's an old house where you got the stairs that go up there.
Yeah, the little pull down. And
you got or a pull down where you got the pull down ladder. You know, some of these older 20s homes, they've got a, you know, an attic space up above that they got a staircase that goes up to. And maybe they've got, you know, a layer of fur down there so you can store stuff. And it's a storage area. But you really got to take a peek and make sure that you're doing something that's going to be good for the house. Because, you know, if you've got an engineered truss system up there with a bunch of insulation, that can be its own big project. You just don't want to put down, you know, some boards over the top of that and crush the insulation down.
Yeah.
You know, you want to keep this stuff insulated. So here's the thing. you got to think about with a pre-engineered truss, and that's where you see like the 2x4s or 2x6s, and they've got those metal plates that are all pushed together,
yep,
you know, holding the whole thing together. Now, with those, that attic space is only designed up there to hold a few hundred pounds. There's not much you can do up there without having to add structure. And at that point, it's also the insulation's probably in a roof is going to be higher than what the wood is. So those are things, you know, because you usually have to have 10 inches or so of insulation up there, depending on where you live, or more. So if you think about that, you're going to have to go in there and frame that and make that floor, those rafters thicker. Yeah. So you might have to get up into a 2x8, 2x10, depending on what the span is. So really, that's the time that I would bring a structural engineer and say, hey, I want to beef this up so I can store some stuff up here. Can you do some drawings? Yeah, it might cost you a grand or two to do some drawings, but you know you're going to build something that's going to be strong.
And you have a plan.
Yeah. And you can get up there and do it right.
Well, and especially if you're going to be going up there, because I know, I mean, I've got a buddy who has an attic. It looks like, from what I could tell, and again, I'm not a pro, but it looks like a pretty well-done job of an attic over his garage. Mm-hmm. And it's big enough to where he's actually walking up in there. It's where they keep all their Christmas and Halloween decorations and all of that stuff. But he actually, it's a walk up and to support. Now, it depends on what you're going to have. Are you going to have to walk up there? If you're going to have to walk up there, you've got to account for an extra 100, 200, I don't know how big you are. An extra 100, 200 pounds on top of whatever else you've got up there.
Absolutely. So these are things that you really got to pay attention to. I mean, I have had that attic staircase up into the truss rafters of my own houses before. And by the time I put the Christmas stuff up there, I could see a little deflection when I'm standing at eye level at the ceiling on that ladder going, I have that overloaded. I got to take some stuff down. I could just see that there was some sag in that roof.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's not you. You are
big
now.
Big red.
And I didn't have that much up there. So this is where you got to really be careful of how you're doing that and what you're putting up there. So it's one of those things that, and it can be a big project. It's even bigger if you want to actually create living space up there.
Yep.
You know, great story. And this is one that I ran into, and it's been a year or so since I've told the story. So I'm going to tell it again.
Okay.
We had this happen on a project that I was working with a local construction company here with. And I was the designer for it. We had a design, homeowner signed off on it, permits were issued, they're tearing out the master bathroom on the second floor of this 1920s home and putting a new one in the same exact spot. No walls moving, no nothing.
Just modernizing, upgrading.
Modernizing and upgrade. They get it gutted out, inspector walks over, walks up to the top, gets the top of the stairs, goes, well, that's a problem. What do you mean? What's the problem? Oh, well, this house never was permitted for a second floor. This is storage.
Everything
and
up
you
the
have
stairs.
Two bedrooms and two bathrooms.
Oof.
Yeah. Bad.
No, yeah.
Bathroom's already gutted. You can't all of a sudden go to take it and put it back. Building department gave a permit on it. Nobody paid attention that wasn't. And this inspector went through and looked. Now, the worst part is in the city of Portland, I'm going to call these guys out on this mess, that they, when they converted everything over in the 80s and 90s to electronics, they lost about 7 or 8 years of data.
Oh.
So there could have been a permit on this.
But their whole excuse is that, well, yeah,
we
don't supposed
it.
To have that.
Yeah, if you have it, show me. They weren't living there.
Yeah.
Now, we did find plans that were stamped to be submitted, but there's no record of the permit being given or the inspections.
Or like the actual sign-off that it actually happened. But it was turned into the city.
Maybe. They had it at one point.
It was stamped.
Yeah. But it could have been given for pre-approval.
Could have been rejected or something.
Could have been rejected. So there's not those kind of things. So how this played out is these people had to spend another this was 2017. So they had to spend another $110,000 getting that upstairs up to 2017 building code.
Permitted and coded. Yeah.
So they had to go down in the basement, tear up the basement, finish basement, and put in new posts
to support
and
the
new
higher,
footings to take the load. They had to go up and tear off and confirm what shear loads were. So they had to take some beautiful plaster down on the second floor to open the walls up. It was a mess. So it's not sometimes something that's very easy to do for attic storage. So be careful. if you get into this, sometimes a storage shed in the backyard
is just going to be
a better option. Less absolutely. And so this is just one of those things I just want you to be really careful with. And it's a great debate. You know, you can put a few boxes up there, you're fine. But I mean, I've got some file boxes up in mine and I wouldn't put any more up in there.
No. You just got to watch your weight, be aware, and keep an eye on things. If you put it up there, make sure you're looking at, you know, whatever it's on and making sure it's not bending, it's not warping, it's not taking too much of a strain, because you don't want that stuff coming down.
My garage where we're sitting here right now.
Yeah, I know. Things could fall on me.
And no.
No, I trust it all. I know.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, a lot of the stuff I have up there is moldings and stuff for the house, yeah. Stuff that I've, you know, that are laying out flat that I don't have to lean up. I can lay them out flat up there and good to go. And it's not too bad that way. But really, again, just thinking about that stuff. And then I'll be honest, here's one other little safety tip. Put a smoke detector up there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it might not do so well with the heat, so get something that's going to be durable up there. I don't mind having a smoke detector up there because I would like to hear that thing going off. If you put something up there in a box that maybe had batteries that shorted out, maybe you have a nickel cadmium battery or something that fries out up there, I'd like to hear it before the smoke gets downstairs because, yep, as we've learned with previous shows, that can happen.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as long as that's going to trigger before you smell it.
That's the thing, and I want that to go off, so I want to make sure that we have that dealt with, because otherwise you got a heck of a problem. If you get that fire going,
you're too late.
And we had that with, you know, Lieutenant Mike Sampo from FDNY. He brought that up, and you can have a heck of a fire before you even know it downstairs, especially when it's sealed off. All right. When we come back, let's talk about cleaning up mold for a little bit. We'll do that just as soon as Around the House returns.
Satchel from Steel Panther, and you are listening to
Around the House with Eric G.
Yeah.
We love Eric G, and you should too.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is your home improvement source every weekend. Thanks for joining us, and make sure that you catch us during the week too on the podcast, because not only are we on the radio and the podcast every single Saturday out there, but I want you to catch us on Wednesdays and Thursday as well. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder. Yeah, we've got a couple different little mini shows that we put out, two different ones each week. One is the Around the Toolbox, which is our trade show.
Yeah, it's actually not Around the Toolbox anymore. Yeah.
Oh, God, why do I? Pro see? Insider.
Pro Insider, branding. We changed it. Branding, see?
Darn it. And the midweek special, of course, on Wednesday.
Absolutely, man. God,
I can't believe I did that.
I almost did it a couple weeks ago, so I can't.
Oh, during the actual show? That would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been good. So, yeah, I was, jeez, what am I doing?
Pro Insider.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our pro show out there for all you guys out there. Hey, make sure that you catch me this week if you're listening to the show right here. You know, on Tuesday the 9th, if you're going to be at the International Building Show this week or the Kitchen and Bath Industry Show, on Tuesday the 9th at noon Eastern, I will be doing a Q&A session in the DuPont Corian Endura countertop booth. So look for the DuPont booth over there, and you'll see me over there in that doing a Q&A with those guys. And then on Wednesday the 10th of February, I'm going to be over there, and we're going to be talking. I got my own stage this year.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm you know, stage left. Eric G, stage left. Wait a minute, sorry.
I know you did some sort bring of your, acting bring back your, in the day.
I wasn't talking acting. Well, this is Portland.
Oh, well. Yeah, there you go.
Bring your dollar bills. Anyway.
that's a sort of acting. Yeah.
So anyway, I'll be up there on the home technology stage. I'll be up there talking to home tech, and I've got 10 seminars I've given up there, and I'll be doing Q&A after some of those. So make sure you hit me up over there. We've got a lot of new products we're going to be talking about. Some of those you'll hear on upcoming shows. So,
yeah, we can't talk about them yet because the show hasn't happened yet, but we will get to those in the coming weeks.
Yeah, those are on the schedule. So coming soon near you. Well, I wanted to talk about today. This is another one because it's kind of that time of year that's really important. Mold.
Yeah, February, coming out of winter.
Coming out of winter.
Something to start thinking about.
You know, we got people with moisture issues with snow on the roof. We got people with moisture issue from rains on the West Coast. You know, so we've got a lot of different stuff going on. And it's, you know, down in the South, it's a little more dry season right now. I get it. But mold is one of those things you got to be really careful with. And here's the thing, you know, mold, rule number one for me when you've got a mold issue. Now, it could be just a little bit of mildew on the ceiling in the bathroom. That's one thing. If you are diving into a DIY project and you're opening up a wall and there's mold, this is where, to be honest, I think you got to stop and test the mold.
Well, at that point, you don't know how long that's been there. You don't know where else that could have spread to because you don't know how long that's been there.
Yeah, stop and figure it out. Because here's the thing. There are so many things that we got to be careful with mold because it can be super toxic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what happens is with mold is, let's back up a minute and tell the mold story here. Because with mold, when you dive into it and let's say you see it and you go to, oh, I'm going to just clean it up. Well, when you attack it, it goes into defense mode, and it's going to release microtoxins on some of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that can put you in the hospital. So it's not like, you know, you can clean it up and put on a dust mask. No, you need respirator. And the last thing is you don't need this moving around your house.
No.
So you'd have to contain it. So this is stuff that, you know, and I know there's a, is it black mold? No, you want to figure out what mold that is.
Because there's shit, ridiculous amounts of mold.
Yeah, so you want to make sure.
Kinds.
And there, and here's the thing, you know, and some people make the argument that you should treat all mold that it's toxic. I get that, but some molds are different than other molds. It's not all that level of toxicity. And you can go in, you know, safely and take care of it in some cases. I mean, if you're just going to hire a pro in, then don't worry about it. Hire a pro to come in and take care of it, you know. And I've done that. I was doing some consulting work, and there was a law firm that I went over into. And in the basement, 1920s house, they had all their file boxes, right? Stacked up for all their old cases.
Yeah.
Had a hold on to them. They were in these cool file boxes that were waterproof. Everything was good. Problem was, is in that basement, there was not enough airflow to get behind those. And that concrete in the basement wall just kept...
Just stuck, all the moisture just stuck behind there. Yep. And didn't go anywhere.
And you had a little bit of light through a couple little tiny basement windows, and you had plenty of moisture, plenty of oxygen, and enough material in the air to feed them.
Nice, warm, wet, enclosed space.
It looked like a black felt wall.
Yeah, I can only imagine pulling those away just to see what was behind there.
It was bad. And, you know, people weren't going down there. They weren't paying attention. It wasn't really a conditioned space. So that was one where I was just like, get the pros in here.
I don't want to touch this. Get somebody to take care of this for me.
Well, because we needed to waterproof that wall.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those things where it was just a complete mess. And that's where you bring the pros in on that stuff. That is not a DIY project. You bring in the pros, let them test it, let them tent things off, let them treat it correctly, put the people in the hazmat suits down there, and clean it up. That's not a project, you know. And then... I want to give this one here right off the bat, because this is not what you do to kill mold.
What? Use water?
Use bleach and water.
Yeah.
Bleach does not kill mold. So if you think about it, you are actually treating that, and all you're doing
is feeding it.
You're just feeding the mold.
That is why it's there in the first place, because it's a wet area.
That's all you're doing. And so what happens is you hit that mold with bleach, and it makes the mold clear, and the water that's in the bleach feeds it. So it's like, hey, we're going to make you harder to find.
Yep.
And now you're going to feed us, and now we're going to grow even more.
And spread.
Yeah, so you do not use bleach to kill mold. We come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about cleaning up mold. We'll do that just as soon as Around the House returns.
Hey, this is Ron Keel, the metal cowboy from Keel, the Ron Keel Band and Steeler. We are rocking around the house with Eric G.
Raise your fist, make your stand.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is your home improvement source every weekend. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Eric G.
Absolutely. I'm Dane Vodder.
We've been having a good time in here. If you missed the first half of the show, go back because you got to hear me. Rarely do I call people out by name out in the media.
And not hold back.
Yep. I called somebody out. This is a rarity.
We did it. We're fine with it. We got no problem with it. We're proud to do it.
And if you're the one that we're calling out, feel free to retort.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to have that conversation.
I'd love to get the structural engineer out to like that. Take a look at that one, because you were the inspiration of my top 10 reasons you got to be careful when dealing with a bad house flipper. And that was a bad house flipper.
Absolutely. And this is not saying that all house flippers are bad. It's a very valued profession. As long as it's done right.
Correct. So that you don't want to miss that one. That one's a hot subject. Well, today we've been talking about in this segment here, I want to continue talking about cleaning up mold, because it's one of those things that I just really want you to take some good steps.
And know that you're doing it the right way.
Yeah. You know, mold is happening because you have high humidity. Let's be honest. You have moisture humidity problem. And so many homes out there need a dehumidifier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the other thing you got to be careful with.
That's not the end all be all, though.
Here's the thing. You need to have your house generally under 50% relative humidity.
Okay.
If you have that above that, you are in mold growth territory. And what happens is when you get your whole house that has that high, now you get things like in the back of your coat closet. Mm-hmm. You'll have mold grow on the back of the wall.
Those dark, deep spaces that you never really go back
into. You never really
see,
you know, that you could have that too. And that's, you know, because you've got your inside, it's conditioned, it's warmer, things grow easier. It's a little dark. You just don't get the airflow back.
Yeah, I'm thinking like underneath the kitchen sink or a bath sink down there where you might not.
If you've got water down there, it easily happens. You know, and so here's some of the little tricks. One, make sure you do that. So make sure that you can keep it under 50%. Make sure that you've got a dehumidifier working in there. Add it into your HVAC system if you can. You know, in some places of the country, you need a humidifier to get it up because it's too dry.
Yeah.
You know, I really have a problem. You know, if you get into desert areas, you got to be careful because some people still run swamp coolers.
Yep.
You ever run into a swamp cooler?
I know what it is. I've never encountered one personally.
Yeah. So what they are is you've got a kind of a squirrel cage fan. Yeah.
Super cheap air conditioner.
Yeah, well, kind of. But what they do is they add humidity in. So they add humidity to make your body cool off easier.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is they've got this stuff that's kind of a mesh, carpety mesh, you know, filter. And water is pumped down through there, and you're blowing air through it. And so all and you're doing it. And yeah. pushing it through, and that gives you that cooling effect. It's like the misters that you have outside.
Mm-hmm.
At a restaurant, sporting event, that kind of stuff.
But all you're doing is throwing water
in your house, so that you're just creating, you know. And if you've got that old single wide trailer that's, you know, not sealed up, maybe it's not that bad a deal. But if you've got something that's got any kind of weather stripping around it, gotta be a problem.
Just keeping it all in there.
Yeah.
So you're baking. I mean, especially if you're in a desert, which is where you're going to encounter this most of the time.
Got to be careful with that. That can be its own problem. You still can't get it over 50% humidity, so be careful with that. Now, the other things that I want you to be careful with is just keep an eye on things, you know? If you're getting that orange or, you know, copper color mildew growing in the bathrooms or the green.
In the shower.
The shower stuff, just keep it clean, you know? And when you find little bits of mold, go around and take a look around, you know, a few times a year. Pull the curtains back, look around the windows, make sure things are leaking, make sure you don't have an issue. And if you do, that's small, you can go get, you know, if it's a little tiny area, you can go get stuff like mold armor or other stuff that is actually meant to kill and prevent mold. And you can treat that.
Those areas that are,
yeah,
at least seemingly high risk areas to get heavy mold.
Yeah, and so you're okay. And that's the thing. You can tackle some of those things. But, you know, as we said in the last segment, put the bleach away. It doesn't kill it.
Not going to work.
So really thinking about fresh air, clean air, low humidity, under 50% is kind of where you need to be with this. And if you can do that, you're good. Problems that things that will cause mold, like a dry, if you've got your clothes dryer inside the house, and it's not venting correctly to the outside, that can be a big one.
Yep.
You know, you think about it, you're taking wet clothes, putting them in a machine that's going to heat it up and push that air out.
The moisture still has to go somewhere.
It's in your house. Not having bath fans that work, not using them, you know, and going to take a nice hot shower. I want to see you have a really good fan. And if you can, put a humidity controlled sensor on it. So it'll run until it realizes that the humidity is below 50%.
And then kick off.
And kick off. That way it's dry. So those are all good things. Now, here's the problem with those humidity sensors. If you're in Louisiana, let's say, or Florida, and you don't use air conditioning, you just run fans, and it's not your thing. You don't care about being hot.
And they're out there.
They're out there, and that's okay. That's your jam, and I'm cool with that.
I live in Washington, and I have an air conditioner.
I know. See? No, same here, and I'm in Oregon. But here's the thing. You got to think about this. If you have a humidity sensor that turns on at 50-55% humidity, and it's summertime, and you've got 80-85% humidity outside.
Yeah, it's just going to be going nonstop.
It's just going to run, so that's dumb.
And so wear and tear, and it's not going to last.
Doesn't work. Now, if you've got a new house, here is a place that I want you to be very careful with. And we've talked about this in the past, and I talk about it in my seminars this week to builders. If you've got a brand new house that was built in the last 10 years, and you live anywhere that gets rain, Portland's a great example because I can go four houses down the street here and see the problem.
Okay.
When I walk Raven, see it.
You see the issue.
And see the issue.
It's kind of alarming when you live in somewhere that gets a bunch of rainfall every year.
So think about this. So you have a brand new house, attached garage.
Okay.
Two or three car garage, doesn't matter. You know, you see, and how I see it is these people have a really nice glass door on the front of their garage with the frosted glass so you can't see, but you know how you can get the multi-panel garage doors?
Yeah.
The higher end ones. So you got this house. It's all sealed up. It's all insulated. The garage is drywalled. Looks good. Problem is you have people that are out there driving around today. They pull their wet cars in this perfectly sealed garage.
Oh, yeah.
With a hot engine. And that space is not conditioned. Why? Because most of them don't run the heating out there because that means that the exhaust could get sucked back into the house.
Yep.
So it's not going to be part of your heating and cooling system. Because you don't want to get carbon monoxide inside the house. So that, all of a sudden, you get super high humidity in there. I can walk by this house when these people are out running around and have parked their cars in the rain. The inside of the glass looks like it's raining. It looks like
massive condensation.
Condensation on the inside of that. Well, if you've got your holiday boxes stacked in the corner.
Breeding grounds.
You've got maybe your summer clothes in the wintertime.
Ruined.
It's all getting packed up with mold because it's looking for things to grow. And you can literally take anything that's cloth, anything that's perishable in there, and you've got a moldy mess. And your house is still sealed up, but it's not that sealed up. So you could create this huge, massive mold problem.
Absolutely. You need to have it. Sounds like they need some ventilation systems in their garage.
So there's ways to deal with that. You could put in a ERV system. Which is an energy recovery ventilator. You can put in, what I recommend is putting in a couple humidity controlled bath fans, basically, couple Panasonics in there.
Vent to the outside, good to go.
Yep, good to go. We don't really have a time here in our area where the humidity is that high.
No, not reliably, no.
No. So those work. But if you're in the South, not going to be with that. You don't want to do that because all of a sudden, your garage is going to always be running. And so that's where you got to maybe get into conditioning that space or doing something to keep that, a dehumidifier, something like that, to keep that space looking a little bit better. But I don't want that mold going in. Now, the other three places that I see that you got to be careful with that I want you to be looking around your house, especially if you've got an attic space, make sure that you're keeping an eye on that up there because you can get mold in the attic, and that's a very expensive problem.
Absolutely. Well, first thing I can think of is heat rises. That's probably the warmest part of your house. That just makes it even more of a breeding ground, especially if you've got something that's, you've got a leak up there, or some sort of water is getting in up there, you're running into major issues.
Absolutely. So what are those major issues? Maybe you've got a bath fan that vents up into the attic space but doesn't go all the way out. That duct should go all the way up there, right?
Yep.
Maybe you've got a kitchen vent hood that goes all the way out.
Okay.
Well, into the attic, but not all the way out.
Okay, well, that's the issue.
That's the issue. So now you're putting up their food products, grease, like oil, and all that. So you're just asking for it.
And then just heating it all up. Every time you take a shower, throw that bath fan on, you're just throwing all that steam up
there. Pumping all that humidity up there, that steam up there, and all of a sudden, then you got the heat of the attic, and the sun comes out, you've got a problem. I can't tell you how many times I've seen roofers come in, pull all the sheeting off the entire roof down to the trusses, and they're up there.
No venting.
Yeah, well, they're just trying to clean it up so they can put new sheeting back up on it and keep it because it just ends up being a moldy, wet mess.
Ugh, gross.
And now you've got a whole house full of mold you're trying to deal with. So that's my little conclusion on mold in your house. Be careful out there, guys.
Be smart.
Be respectful of it. More of Around the House just as soon as we return. This is your home improvement source every weekend. Thanks for joining us. We got a fun little subject ahead here.
I guess. If that's what you want to call it. Not quite potty talk, but close enough.
Oh, it's just downstream.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to talk septic tanks. We haven't talked about septic tanks for a while, and some of those things that you should do to keep it working.
Absolutely. It's important to talk about this because if it fails, it's such a worse mess to deal with.
Not everybody is a city dweller where you get to have a city sewage system where when you hit the button on the toilet or hit the lever,
it goes away and you don't ever have
to see it again. When you're dealing with a septic system, I mean, I've helped put them in. I won't pump them because that's what professionals are for. But, you know, here's the thing. You got to think about what is going on here. So for people that have never had septic systems and don't understand what they are, they're used for a place where you've got, you know, we'll back it up and kind of give the visual here.
Great.
So when you, within reason, when you flush the toilet or take a shower,
yep,
the dishwasher's running, your clothes washer, that sewage has to go someplace. And of course, you know, we don't have city sewer everywhere. So what happens is it goes down into what they call a septic system.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's different kinds of septic systems. There's pressurized, unpressurized, all those things. We're not going to get into that so much, but that ends up going down outside your house into a tank. Now there could be multiple tanks, but there's a tank and it all kind of mixes up in there and you put enzymes in that tank. And those enzymes eat up the solids.
Break it up.
That way it's small enough. It can go out into the leach field, which is a bunch of pipes that go out in your yard most likely. And they have little holes and there's different size rocks and gravels and stuff in there. So it can go out and go back into the soil. And then that breaks down and that's where that leach field goes. And so that's where the liquid goes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got to be really careful because you can't just throw everything down there like you would in a city sewer system.
No, because those enzymes aren't going to eat everything, I wouldn't think.
They will, but they got to take time.
Okay. So things might back up.
And average lifespan of a septic system is 20 to 30 years if it's well taken care of. Now, I've seen people get decades longer, and that's awesome.
I'm sure you've seen people who didn't even get a decade.
Absolutely. It's depending what you put down there. So let's talk about first some of the things that can really be the enemy.
Sanitary wipes. I didn't know if that was, guessing at what.
Yeah, they plug the system up pretty good because they're too thick. They don't like to break down.
Yeah.
Grease, oil.
Oh, yeah.
Food stuff. You know, that I don't recommend a garbage disposal with a septic tank. Now, they do make ones that are rated for them. But to me, it's like, I don't need the enzymes having to work that much harder.
Just
to clear that up. I'd rather just put it in the trash or recycle it or compost it or do something else. I'd much rather see that going versus spending the $30,000 you're going to need to replace that if you have to put a pressurized system in.
Ugh, that sounds like not what you want to do.
No. And I mean, you can put in, depending on what the codes are in your area. You know, I've seen $10,000 systems. I've seen $30,000 systems. It's depending on how it has to be built. In some areas, they get pretty dang complex. Now, here's the thing. I want to see you making sure you're putting the right enzymes down there. I've used the Red X. There's, you know, if you have a septic designer that designed your system, use what they recommend.
Yeah.
And that's good. But really, every 3 to 5 years, you need to have a professional come in and pump that out.
Even just to inspect it and look at it.
Yeah, just inspect it, look at it, clean it up.
Make sure it's working properly.
Make sure it's working good, and then you're good to go. I know it's going to cost you a few $100 to do that.
But it's only totally every couple of years. That's not that big on their pocketbook to make sure everything. I mean, this is one of the last things you want to be cleaning.
Yeah, you don't want to have to go out there and have to have your whole entire yard
exactly tore up. I've seen it.
It's bad.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And you know that everywhere you're stepping in sewage.
Yeah. So here's the thing. When you've got that, be really careful with that. And be careful with your landscaping. You don't want roots getting down into this. So I really just want to have a nice green lawn over the top of your septic system. I don't want to see a place where you're running 4x4, you know, quads across it or motorcycles or anything. I want this to be a not well-traveled area because it's the last you're going to tamp down into that. I mean, I wouldn't even put a soccer play field over it. Now, you could. There's nothing wrong with it. But I want to see that being a less traveled area. It's not a place to put trees, bushes, that kind of stuff. It's going to take it down.
Well, and that also makes sense in case something goes wrong. You want it to at least, you don't want to be pulling out trees in order just to get to something when it fails or when it breaks or anything like that. It's easier to get to if you just have grass over top.
Yeah. And so really stay on top of this stuff. If you've got an old one, you know, you try to milk it. And to be honest, my opinion is environmentally, and I'm by no means an environmentalist, but if you have that opportunity to hook up to a city sewer system down the road, take it, because that way you can hook up, pay that cost once, and not have to go out and spend that big chunk to replace it.
It's a peace of mind, I would think. That is a decision that would lead to easier peace of mind down the road.
Yeah, and you know, it depends. You know, ask questions, because I was talking to a buddy who's on a septic system now this last week. And he's like, man, if I wait a few years, it's going to cost me a lot less. If I do it now, because they added on to the sewer system at that time, it'll cost him $20,000 to hook up to it. If he waits 2 more years, it'll cost him $4,000. So he's going to make his septic system work all the way through for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I guess.
And milk it to make sure it's working.
Yeah, in his position, I guess I'd get it inspected right about now. That buys you that year or two before you get there, and you know it'll last that long. Good to go.
Yeah, even if you have to spend a few extra $100 and get it pumped once a year.
That's fine.
If you don't know about it and just make it work, you're going to be better off. You're going to be better off. Well, hey, if you missed the show today, make sure you hit the podcast. You can catch that podcast anywhere out there. And thanks for listening to the podcast if you're one of our active podcast listeners. Now, if you're catching us on like Apple iTunes, make sure you subscribe. Same thing with Spotify and all these others. If you're listening that way, we appreciate you. We're listening. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. That way you get notified every time we have new stuff. And there'll be new stuff, and I might even get off schedule a little bit. If I see something new, I might throw a special one up there, and you might not miss it. I don't want you to miss it, because there's going to be some good stuff as it happens. It's that time of year, man.
Time of year?
Yep. It's that time of year. Show's over.
We do more than we do 52 of these a year.
Exactly. It's that time.
Let's flush it.
Okay. All right. I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vodder.
And you've been listening to
Around the House.
Around the House with Eric G. is produced by Designed by Eric G. in association with Salem Media and distributed nationally by the Sun Broadcast Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2020 Designed by Eric G. We will be back next week. If you missed part of the show, check out the podcast of all of our shows at AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Remember, measure with a micrometer, mark with caulk, and cut with an axe. Thanks for listening to Around the House. We'll be right back.
it's Eric G from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.